Hey everyone, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and this is a place where I bring you authentic conversations with people who are willing to share their journey through seasons of grief. No matter your cultural upbringing, societal conditioning, or faith practice, grief affects us all. Whether you're dealing with a loss, a diagnosis, a broken heart, or the everyday stressors of life, or love someone who is, these conversations are here to support you in that process. So be sure to check out the show notes for potential trigger warnings. And whether you're very comfortable with or deeply avoidant of grief and its many responses, you are welcome here. Thank you for being here, and now on to the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia. And today I am very, very excited to bring to you my friend, Karen Bradley Smith, who is joining us from Georgia. And to introduce Karen, I would say I met Karen, I want to say about 3 years ago on a whitewater kayaking trip. And I got to stay in the same cabin that she was in and have been able to kayak with her a couple of times. And one of the most beautiful things about her story when you meet her is she has such joy and so much fun. And another fun fact is that she has been kayaking since 1985 and celebrates a very big birthday this summer in July. She will be 75. And the reason, hi, Karen.
Hey.
I'm still talking about you, but her story is amazing because she's experienced grief in a way that is unimaginable. And knowing her story and being able to see her resilience and also know what she has gone through that grief process is why I knew I had to get her on the podcast to talk about it and share about her story with us. Before I get to that, I wanted to, one, say hi again, Karen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, can you tell us about your cultural upbringing and background?
Oh, I was pretty normal. I was raised in Georgia, but kind of all over North Georgia. My dad was on the Georgia State Patrol, and my mom was a nurse. So we lived, I guess my favorite place to live was Blue Ridge.
Oh.
So I naturally kind of migrate to the mountains every chance I get. So you found me up on the Nantahala.
Yes,
but,
ma'am.
The first time, I spend a lot of time up around LAJ and Blue Ridge, doing a lot of kayaking up there. But we moved there when I was 9 years old, and my dad actually got transferred back to Atlanta for a governor's term for 4 years, but we kept our house there, and I actually got to graduate from high school there. So I consider Blue Ridge my home. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're aware of it, but a lot of times the Georgia State Patrol guys get transferred when the governor changes.
Oh, no.
It's very typical. So as he moved up through the ranks, we moved around a good bit. But I love Blue Ridge, and I consider that my home place. And then I went to school down at Georgia Southern. Okay. My mom was a nurse. So from the time I was 11, I was the first child. And then when I was seven, I had a baby brother that I wanted very much. I had to wait a long time to get a baby.
Uh-huh.
And I was his primary babysitter from the time I was 11. So my mom went back to work, and I took care of my little brother. He was four then. He was quite a handful. So that was our whole family, the four of us. My brother is still my baby.
Yeah.
And aww, he's in his 60s, but I still mother him today. And I guess that's just how it goes when you're 7 years older.
Yes, ma'am.
But we had a pretty typical life for the 50s and 60s. And it was a pretty strict environment. It was a loving home. Nothing crazy happened. It was pretty happy. situation. Very faith-oriented, Southern Baptist upbringing. Just pretty typical for that time.
Yeah. And then you had your own children.
I had my own, and I had my husband's own, and we adopted a fifth child. So my husband and I got married 44 years ago, almost 45 now.
Wow.
He had two children. I had two children. So it was my second marriage. We've been married almost 45 years. He had a girl and a boy, and I had two boys. Two of them were Erics. We both had a child with the same name. And they were all basically the same age. I don't know if I can do this. I'll try. 10, 9, 7, and 5.
Woo.
So we had a house full of kids. And then when our youngest son was 14, we adopted a little girl.
Aww.
And she is now 35. So that's our baby.
Yeah.
And she's a kayaker too, I might add.
Yes.
And so we've had a super great relationship, super great family.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
And oldest.
Oh, go ahead.
My oldest son is the father of Collier, who passed away, and that's what we were talking about for tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And we will absolutely be able to talk about the amazing sense of humor and beautiful joy that Collier was and still is in your world and for all of us. I do want to ask first, do you know your Enneagram number?
Yes, I do. I was so mad when I found out what it was. It's a one. A one. A perfectionist, a control freak.
No,
that's me.
No.
And okay. then you told me that it wasn't all bad.
No, it's not all bad. You listed like all the normal stereotypes of the type one, the perfectionist. But what is not said is that our ones, which shout out to my first podcast guest, Becky Irby, who has a birthday this week, May 2nd, but she is a one. And she helped me fall in love with ones because they are so beautifully efficient. They're the reason why we have efficiencies and organization and structure. But they go to seven in growth and when you're thriving, and that is your adventurous spirit. That's why I was like, of course, that makes so much sense, and why you're such a joy on the river. It's so, which by the way, I want to say congratulations to you because. Is it for 2023 season that you had 6 out of 6?
No, or, 2024.
Or 2024.
6 out of 6.
She
yes.
has had 6 out of 6 combat roles. And for those who don't know what that is in kayaking, when you're in your kayak and you get turned over by the current or in the water at any point and you can roll back up without having to do a wet exit and get out of your boat, abandon your boat and bring it to the side and try to dump it and then get back in. She has done that 6 times and that is amazing. Like seriously, you're a badass.
I'm so proud. And my husband, when I told my, I called my husband and said 6 for 6, and he goes, why were you upside down to start with?
Because you were surfing. You were surfing
yes,
a wave and you were doing it amazing. I saw the video and it just snagged
crying.
You right at the end. I mean, just right at the end. And you just came
I
right back
crying.
Up.
I'm so glad I can still paddle. I really
yeah.
am. I yep. know that is a gift.
It is, and it's an inspiration for me, but we'll get back to that. So it's amazing. Your oneness is great. And by the way, the ones do go to 4 in stress. So those that are learning about the Enneagram, there's a lot of information there, but you are a beautiful one and are in a lot of growth because I see your adventurous and joyful spirit all the time.
Thank you.
Okay, so can you share with us how you came to this level of the grief journey?
Well, in 2015, my little grandson, Collier, was 11 years old. He was this delightful, witty, intelligent, healthy child. Mm. He was an honor student. in fifth grade. He had just, we had just gone to honors night at his school for the first semester. He was the child who I would call and say, when you come, can we go to McDonald's? I want a chicken sandwich. And he would say, oh, I guess I can put some of those chemicals in my body. So he was very conscious about the food he ate. I kept fruit for him. And he was just a very different kind of child. And we were very connected at the heart. We just understood each other. Now, he has a sister who is exactly 15 months younger than he was. And really, sort of because of this, we were connected. When he was about 6 months old, he came to my house wearing a onesie that said, guess what? And I was like, why does he have a onesie with magic marker on it? And on the, I turned him around, and on the back it said, I'm going to be a big brother.
Aww.
And I was so aggravated because I was like, he's too little to be a big brother. He hasn't gotten to be a baby yet.
Aww.
Of course, I was fine with having another baby, but all of it, I was like, now he's just going to have to be my baby. So I just kind of took him under my wing because it was rough having two babies in one family of people who worked. They both were teachers.
Right.
So I became his ally, and I ran interference for him all the time. And he was in a lot of trouble a lot of the time, I'm telling you. He was not the saint that people make people who have gone to heaven out to be.
Oh, yeah.
He was a prankster. He was a tricky little boy, and he liked to play tricks on you, and he tried out a few cuss words, and he was a little bit rebellious at times, but he was the thing that got him in the most trouble was that he was extremely witty.
Right.
And he outwitted both his parents a lot.
Mm.
And I was very firm with him. So even though I was firm and I made him do what I said, I also was very loving with him, which they were too. But he seemed to really, we just seemed to get along. We seemed to understand each other. So we had a special, I said all that to say we had a special relationship. In 2015, there was a snow day. Mm-hmm. On February 25th, and he had been playing mostly in the house all day because he loved video games, and he had a little friend with him, a younger child, playing video games with him, and that child came downstairs and told his mom that he had a headache. So she went up to check on him, and he had what she thought was a migraine, so she turned the lights out, gave him some ibuprofen, and told him to try to sleep. And in about a few minutes, he was screaming in pain, and he became unconscious and had other symptoms. Of course, they called an ambulance, but because of the snow, it was hard for the ambulance to get there. They had to send a police vehicle up the mountain to get him and take him down to the ambulance. And he couldn't go to Children's Hospital in Atlanta from Rome, Georgia. He had to go to the trauma center at Floyd. And there was a wonderful neurosurgeon who was able to make it to the hospital and relieve pressure on his brain. And until they actually got to Children's Hospital the next day, they weren't exactly sure what was the problem, but it was a brain aneurysm in the center of his brain.
Wow.
So we knew they couldn't fly a helicopter in or a fixed wing plane in. We actually had to wait for an ambulance to get there. So we knew that the brain damage was significant, but none of the transportation or delays would have made any difference. It was just a time bomb in his head waiting to go off. So the reason I said that all of that about the medical personnel is that we've made really good friends with all of those people. It's amazing. Yeah. The EMTs, the doctor, we still hold them in just we count them as our great friends. They gave us time that we wouldn't have had they not made it up the mountain for him.
Right.
If he had not done the surgery necessary. We still hold them in such high regard for the things that they did just to prolong the time that we had with him. He lived 7.5 months at Children's Hospital at Scottish Rite in Atlanta. So for me, it was hard. But as my son says, we needed that time. Hmm. To adjust. It was a hard way to see him suffer. But I told my son many times, if you think about people who have these kind of things and survive, they really don't remember what happened to them.
Right.
And I said, he's not really aware. As bad as it looks to us, he doesn't know what's happening.
Hmm.
So that was comforting. He got better for just a little while, and then he started to decline. And so from July until October, we saw a huge decline, and that was really hard. And at the end, he had seizures almost constantly, and that was really, mm-hmm. really hard on everybody. But that's kind of the gist of what happened and how it went. For me, during that time, I had his sister with me, and I took her to school and made arrangements for her to get to the hospital to mm-hmm. see him. And they were pretty lenient about the time she could spend with her mom and dad and her brother at the hospital. So all of that was kind of under our responsibility, mine and my husband's. And of course, we did enjoy our time with her, and that was a good distraction for me as well. But it was also kind of sad for us because, you know, we really didn't have a lot to tell her.
Yeah.
We did FaceTime with her mom and dad and her brother to what extent we could at the hospital. He did reach a point that he could blink yes and no to her questions, mm-hmm. things like that. But it was very limited response.
Was that before the July?
Yes.
When he was on? Okay. Yeah.
Up until about the 1st of July, he could do some responding. Yes and no, and he could smile to voices sometimes that he recognized and things like that.
Yeah.
He liked Zendaya, and he recognized her on TV. That was his girlfriend.
That was, he got to smile when her voice came on.
Yes. He would see her on TV, and he was like, that's what he wanted to watch. So there were things like that we knew he was positive about, but there weren't a lot. There was not a good prognosis at all.
Yeah, yeah. You had said, too, that I thought y'all snuck his dog in the hospital.
Yes. He had a precious little chihuahua. She weighed about 5 pounds. Her name was Gwendolyn. He named her Gwendolyn. And they had a big dog named Wrigley, and he changed his names to Charles. Gwendolyn and Charles. I don't know why. But Gwen was the most loving little thing. And so he gave me charge of Gwendolyn. His dad had her, and he said he didn't take really good enough care, so he gave her to me. And he said, would you please take care of her? My mom doesn't want her at her house, and my dad doesn't take good care of her. Can you just take care of her? And I said, I sure can. So Gwendolyn became mine, and she would stand up on the chair and look for him to come in the door when she would hear him come in. So that went on for a good year after Collier passed away, which was really hard. Mm-hmm. But yes, I did. I took her down to Children's Hospital, and his respiratory therapist met me outside with him so he could hold her in his wheelchair. So he got to hold her. You know, she was all snuggled up to him. So that was really sweet. They really went out of their way to do everything to stimulate him.
Yeah. And then you said October. He passed in October.
Right. His heart just couldn't hold out any longer. And he passed away, and we couldn't get there in time. We got a phone call, but he was gone by the time we got to the hospital, and I saw him one last time, and then the funeral was a blur. Everything from there is just kind of a blur. You know, that whole year is a blur to me, pretty much. Him being in the hospital and the visitation and the funeral and everything. I remember not wanting to celebrate Christmas. My husband made me do a lot of things I didn't want to do. Yeah. So I did it.
You said you weren't prepared. You said you even knowing 7 months, you were not prepared for him.
I was not. I guess you're never prepared, but I was still like, I had not thought ahead. You know, I guess being a one, you think you always think ahead and you're planning how it might be, or at least going over that option, but I never did. And so it's just kind of like a bad dream even now when I think about it. Like, I don't remember. I remember that we had the visitation at a large church, and there were lots and lots and lots of people there. But I don't remember, except for immediately around me. And lots of support. And, you know, you have those people who don't leave you even if you try to run them off. So I had those people.
So good to hear.
I have one friend that she was with me the night it snowed. She found a Jeep and she got me to the hospital. And she was with me. And I mean, she's been with me this year. So some people just don't leave you.
Yeah. That's good to know. That's good to know. Because it is also common in loss that you lose friends you thought would be there, that you thought would be supportive, and then they can't hang for whatever reason.
They can't. She's one in a million.
No,
Maggie.
Maggie. Shout out to Maggie.
Shout out to Maggie.
I love that. Now, you said the heaviness of that. What did you do right after?
Right after, I went to bed and I refused to get up forever. I wasn't planning to ever get up again. I really, really, really wanted to die. And that was my goal, was just to die. Of course, I'm chicken to do it myself. It wasn't a DIY job for me. So I was like, I just want to die. It shouldn't have been Collier. It should have been me. So I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't. And so my husband said, you need to get out of bed. I was retired then, so I didn't have anywhere I had to be. Right. So my husband said, you have to get out of bed. It's been 3 weeks. You have to get out of bed. So I got out of bed and went to the recliner.
I love it.
And so he came in and said, you have to move. And I said, I did move. I moved to the recliner. I moved. That's all you required.
Yes.
I have moved. And I stayed there for a long time. He said, you are making the dogs depressed. I had a therapy dog, actually. She was a dachshund, but she went to schools, hospitals, nursing homes, and she was doing overtime with me. And he said, you are depressing the dogs. The dogs are pitiful. And I'm like, well, that's what she's here for.
Right.
So I stayed there. That was October, November, December. He insisted on having a Christmas tree. So I said, you can if you put it up. I'm not doing any of that mess.
Right.
So he said, for the other kids, you're going to have to put up a Christmas tree.
Nope.
So I didn't, but he did. And then and I said, no, I'm not taking all that down either. So then after Christmas, I told him, I said, you know what? I love when we went back in January, we had gone down to Crystal River, Florida, where the manatees were. And I said, I think I could be happy in Florida where the manatees are. And he said, okay, why don't you take the motor home and go down there? So I said, well, I would, but you need to drive it. So he said, well, I'll go. But he said, how long do you want to stay? And I said, all the winter. I don't want to be here where it's cold. I don't want it to snow. I didn't think I could stand to see a snowfall. So we did. We took the motor home and we drove to the day after Christmas. And we drove to Crystal River, parked the motor home in a good place. And he stayed about probably a week or 10 days. And then he said, now, I'm going to fly back. You can stay as long as you want to.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I wish you would stay, but okay. So he did. And I felt very abandoned when he left. It really hurt my feelings, but I stayed.
Yeah.
And I had taken my kayak. And so I kayaked with the manatees and I swam in the springs and I cried. But I made some friends. And one of the friends I made was the captain of a boat that did manatee tours. And I did a bunch of tours with him and learned all I could learn about manatees. And the next winter, I went back again.
Yeah.
In fact, I went 3 years in a row. Mm. And I really, really, I got to where I could take a boat out and take my friends. I couldn't do it like, you know, for money, which I didn't want to. Started taking friends out on pontoon boats and showing them the manatees. I really got good at it.
Of course you did.
Perfectionist. Oh, yes, that I am.
Tell me one time. I got it. Okay. I'll handle it from here. That is
so. So anyway, that became a really big hobby of mine. I got really good at finding those suckers, and they would roll over like puppies for you to rub their bellies. And I loved it. It was such a spiritual experience. Mm. It was amazing, and they look you straight in the eyes. The very second winter I was down there, I saw a sign around the corner at a church that said grief share.
Mm.
So I was like, well, I wonder what that is. And I wonder
what they're doing.
I did, exactly. So I just went in to find out. Mm. And there were 15 people just as bad off as I was.
Mm.
Worse. Some were worse.
Yeah.
And it's a Bible-based grief group, a mm-hmm. therapy group for people just like me.
Right.
So when I was checking them out to see what they were doing, I decided to go back and I completed a 13-week program mm-hmm. and it really was helpful.
Yeah.
So the next year I went back again and did it again.
I love it.
And then the third year, I took it back to my church and did a program. And I did it 2 more years at my church. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So it was a really, really, if anybody's interested, it's griefshare.org. Mm-hmm. And you can look it up and see if it's available in your community if you are interested. It's amazing. It's an amazing program.
Mm.
God had a reason for me to go to Florida because that did help.
Yeah.
It helped to see that other people were hurting like I was.
Right.
And that they could talk about it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about, because I want to go to the grief share, back to sitting in the bed and then on the couch. And the reason why I love your willingness to share that part of grief, because it is very universal, but it's the honest part that I think a lot of people end up wanting to avoid, wanting to not be honest and say, this is exactly where I am. For you to be able to say, I wanted to die, how that just absolutely makes perfect sense. And then knowing that's a human response that so many other people and you saw in the group also have. And I would just want for the listeners to know that's the whole reason why I wanted to bring a podcast about grief, is because to normalize this experience that's happening for all of us and to normalize the responses that we have, and that it's okay to be honest that those are what we're experiencing. And I love that he did push you and encourage you, but you had to make that choice to get out of the bed, and you had to make that choice to get, and it was so courageous to even be willing and then go to the couch. And then to go, you know, I really think this thing moving down to Florida for some time and to be near the water and the manatees that I love and finding that thing that you love, and you could do it, that you were willing to go do that thing that would help bring healing. And it's just profound to me, because it's those moments, I think, and your story just showing that and confirming that it's literally pursuing the next thing, just that next step that gets you to a state of openness of like, okay, I don't want to just lay down and die. I do, but I'm not going to choose that. What could I do next? I love that.
I think that at that point, I was open to the idea that people say that's not what your loved one would want. Well, he didn't tell me what he wanted, but I can tell you this, that's not what he would do.
Right.
He would be living life to the fullest. Mm. So it's not what Collier would want. It's how can I honor Collier?
Mm.
So when I came back, I was like, how can I honor Collier? And I did. I had thought about it. Grief Share made me think, how can I honor him? Serving others.
Right.
And I did. I went to work at my food bank at my church, and I became a CASA volunteer, which is, for those people who don't know, it's a court-appointed special advocate for children who are under the care of DFACs. I did that for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And anything I could, you know, I love animals, so I worked a little bit with the Humane Society. I had already had a compassionate paws therapy animal. So I looked for things that I could do, but things that I would enjoy and do. I also knew that water was very healing to me. I really enjoy water. So I decided to go back to kayaking. And that's when I really, really decided to really get back into kayaking. And to tell you the truth, I can't remember exactly how I dove back in, but when I do something, that number one just keeps coming back. I do it full time. I mean, I don't just mess around. Right now, I spend 4 days a week at my camper, 4 nights a week at my camper, mm-hmm. and paddle Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes Monday. And if it rains, I go again. You know, I might go a Wednesday. But if I find somebody who's going, you know, I'll go. Somehow, I decided to go back at it. And for an older body, it's not as easy as it used to be. So I had to really work at it. And I'm going to lots of lessons and paddle schools and all kinds of stuff. But that's been really, really good for me mentally, too. So,
yeah.
Winter, I like to go to Florida. Summers, I try to stay on the rivers. So, that's been healing. So, lately, instead of doing so much serving, I've done a lot of self-serving with water sports. But, but it's been good for me.
Self-care, yes. That's great. Yes. It's amazing to watch, too. Like, one, I haven't seen you on the river because I need to go back. But seeing your videos and just knowing, oh my goodness, it's amazing to watch you out there.
Well, to make you feel better, back in September, I got trashed on the Ocoee. So just so you know, it's not always fun and games.
No, that's on the Ocoee, just one of the rivers that every person wants to go down in the Southeast. And you're just out there bebopping down.
Oh, it beat me up pretty good.
It bebopped you back. But that's
yes, it did.
That's part of the sport.
It is part of the sport. You have to have a few bruises.
Yes, you do. And you've had quite a few. You've had a few. Didn't you have an issue? There was something on the Cardake or the, where was that?
At Columbus, I got beat up pretty
Columbus.
Bad too.
Yeah,
I did.
I do remember that. Yeah. So I hear you saying that once you were able to get to that to Florida and you were able to focus on just, I mean, crying in the river, you know, being in the water, being around the water and the manatees and all of that was so healing. And then you joined the Grief Share. Tell me a little bit more about what you learned from the Grief Share group.
One thing I learned is there were about half that group were men who had lost their wives. Mm. And that was so sad because the men seemed to be more, I don't know, they were pitiful. They were more lost to me than the women. I mean, I probably shouldn't categorize them like that, but I am very empathetic, and it broke my heart to see them just so broken and so lost. There also was a grandmother who had lost their grandchild because she was left in a car by her father who was DUI, and he forgot her and left her in a car. And I thought, oh man, it could be worse. That was horrible.
Right.
And, you know, there were just so many things, like, it was almost like God was saying, you're not the only one, you know, you need to get a grip. You're not the only one. I tend to take things like that too. I'm like, I'm just feeling sorry for myself. I need to quit. You know, I need to get my act together. So I learned in there that there was empathy from everybody. I mean, I had people come up to me and say, my husband lived his life. Your grandson was just 11. And I'm like, you know what? No one's grief is worse than another.
Right.
It's all the same. It's all loss. And I think that's another thing people sometimes discount. Well, they were 80 years old. They lived their life. Well, it doesn't matter. Loss is still loss.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we have to understand. God knows the number of our days. And I'm glad we don't know.
Right.
So he knew that when he gave us that perfect boy, that he had 11 years to fulfill his purpose.
Yeah. Such a beautiful thing when you recognize you don't have to compare your suffering to other people.
Like, no, you don't.
You don't. And there's such freedom in that, because then you get the freedom to just feel how you feel about your experience and also it frees up grievers from feeling like they're in the middle of their grief and all of a sudden they have to, you know, soothe you or comfort you because you're unable to, you know, unwilling to let yourself feel what you feel.
You know, that's something else I did learn is there's nothing you can say to make it better.
No. Nope.
But knowing that, especially if you knew him and you say, I had a lady come up to me at church and say, you know, I had an experience with Collier. And I'm like, oh no. And she said, no. She said, it was so funny. He was hilarious. But she said, he was little. And she said, I had to go in the men's restroom because I was in a hurry and the women's was busy. And she said, when I came out, he said, you know, you're not supposed to be in there, right?
He said
he was a little bitty boy. And she said, I'll never forget that. And she said, I know, but it was an emergency. And he said, well, you're not a boy.
Yeah.
So, you know, people just, you can't say anything to make me feel better, but you can share a story with me. Or, you know, you can say, oh, I remember your grandson. So-and-so, maybe not even a story, just I remember who he was.
Yeah.
It means so much.
Yeah.
So sometimes just a word, like, it makes a difference in somebody's day.
Yeah. What were some ways that people didn't say? What are some things they could avoid saying that maybe you've experienced?
You know, nobody has hurt my feelings with anything. And it may be because I'm, you know, I was a kindergarten teacher for 30 years. So nothing hurts my feelings.
Out of the mouth of babes. No, they will tell you.
I'm pretty tough.
Yeah.
Nobody ever, said anything, but probably the wisest thing anybody ever said to me was my granddaughter. She said, "We can talk about Collier." And I told her, I said, "If we need to talk about Collier when you're here, it's okay." And she said, "We can talk about Collier, but only good, happy memories. That's all."
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the wisest thing. And I said, "You know what? That's all I really have of him." And, you know, I said, she said, "Well, I was thinking about hospital stuff. We don't ever need to talk about that." And I said, "Oh, no, we don't need to talk about hospital stuff."
Yeah.
So, I told her, "You know, you taught me how to remember him when you said that."
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's so smart. And she was 10 when she, or maybe 11 when she told me. So yeah. I think kids can just teach you so much.
Right. And what I love, too, that you've done and why I gravitated towards you is because we're Facebook friends and you share about Collier all the time and you have Collierisms, as you say, and then you share memories and photos and tell a story. And it's so beautiful and honoring because I think that speaks volumes to people who aren't grieving that loss to know that a lot of people want to talk about their loved one. They want to share about their person.
Right.
And you do that so beautifully. Did you always feel that or did you have to grow into that comfortability?
I think with that is I want you to know what I miss. You know, I miss a beautiful, witty, loving, kind child. He was so kind. Probably one of the things I remember most is he had the most amazing kindergarten teacher. His mom said, "Collier got the best teacher. She's a black version of you." And I'm like, "What?" She said, "No kidding. She's real firm like you and loving like you." And I said, "Well, I don't think I know her, but
yeah,
I did get to know her. And she is amazing." And she taught Black history. Her name, a shout out, her, and she tolerated a lot that year. Her name is Ms. Pace. Okay. Shout out to Janice Pace.
Janice Pace.
She taught in February, Black History Month.
Right.
So he's 5 years old. We're going to some event and he said, "Do you know what I want to be when I grow up?" And I said, "No, but you can be anything you want to be." And he said, "I want to be a famous Black American." I got so tickled that I thought I was going to pop. And my husband's going, "Don't laugh at him." And I'm like, "Yes, I am going to laugh."
Great ambition, Collier. Great.
I'm like, so I told his teacher, I said, "You've done a wonderful job."
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love that.
Don't ever tell your kids they can be anything they want to be.
They will come up with the most random things. That's
And he was so serious. So, you know, he was just outside the box all the time. And his parents would get so frustrated with him. And I would say, "Y'all are only mad at him because he's smarter than both of you put together."
Which, by the way, your grandmother name is?
Nina.
Nina. So Nina comes to the defense.
Every time.
I love that. I love that. So if I may, I'm curious because there's so much about when someone young dies before like someone older. What did you navigate through with that as far as understanding, like you said, you knew God said he had 11 years. And part of that grief process for you was that not being prepared. And also you were at a stage of life where you're like, "Okay, I feel like I'm old enough. I could just go." But being that you are now almost 75 and walking through that, you got, it's almost like a new lease on life from this loss. Can you tell me about that?
Well, there came a day where I thought, it's okay to feel joy. It's okay. I read about Job and how he regained not what he lost,
Mm-hmm.
but more than he lost. And that did happen to me. I will never regain what I lost.
Right.
I didn't get Collier back. I do have a total of 8 grandchildren, and that's step-grandchildren and grandchildren together, but they're all grandchildren to me. I have everything that I could possibly want. I get to do anything I want to do, go anywhere I want to go. But just one day I was going home and all the kids were going to be there at the pool and everything. And I thought, you know what? We do have so much. And it's okay for me to feel joy again. Probably 4 years. It was probably 4 years before I allowed myself to think that it was okay to feel joy. Yeah. I'm sure I felt some happiness along the way, but I think that that's when I thought it's okay. And I think people deny themselves the right to feel joy. I now can, you know, I don't have a problem with that anymore. I can be joyful. I can be, I can have fun. It doesn't show any disrespect to Collier or to the loss of Collier. I think it shows people that life can go on. And I know that we'll be together again. That is part of my faith. Right. But I think that it's very important for people. You don't have to say that's what he would want you to do. You don't know what they want.
Right.
You don't really, unless somebody tells you. It's okay.
Yeah.
To be happy, to be joyful, and to live your life. No matter who it is, I don't think they want you to die with them.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense at all to anybody.
Right.
So I think that I just decided I was not being good for anybody, including me.
Yeah.
To not live.
Right. And not live open and willing to experience joy. Willing to see that.
And I really want to inspire other people to want to live.
Yes, ma'am. Which is so beautiful.
When I see people who lose, especially people who lose a child, it breaks my heart. I know what their grief journey looks like. I know how bad it is. I know how hard it is. And I know some of them won't make it. Yeah. I know it's going to be so hard. I pray right then. As soon as I see that, I pray right then that they can find the strength to make it through that journey.
Right.
You can make it. Some of them choose not to make it.
Right, right.
But you have to make that choice. And it took me a long time to make that choice.
Which I want to say, thank you for saying that, 4 years. And even before, we had a conversation where you said, well, I don't know if I want to say this number. It had been 2 years or something. There was something 2 years before you went to the grief share. Was that what it was?
Yes.
Yeah, before you were willing to face the grief in that way of being supported and look at it head on, 2 years. But I'm like, no, that is in the range of normal. Like, it's okay that it took you 2 years. You showed up at the 2 year mark.
Right. And everybody has a different time frame.
Right.
You know, it could be longer or shorter. It could be really long. But I see it with, you know, if you lose a spouse, everything in your life changes. Everything. Right. Who takes out the garbage? Everything. For real.
That was amazing.
Okay. I am thinking ahead.
Definitely. You've got a list of efficiencies we're going to take. Garbage is clearly very important.
I'm a number one, remember?
We need to get Troy on the call and find out about this garbage situation.
No, don't tell him.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, everybody's experience of what they've lost, who they've lost, is so different. And we don't have to have that same shared experience to recognize that grief, it's universal. Like, it's just everybody can understand the tenets of grief and the responses of grief.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say to the person who, because you've got anticipatory grief that you had while in the hospital, there was all the leading up to it, then the after. What would you say to the person who is going to face losing a child or a grandchild? What would you want them to know right out of the gate.
First, you're stronger than you think you are. Mm-hmm. Feel what you feel. Like, I spent some time screaming. I bet the people who were camping next to me thought I was being attacked. But I really did. I spent some night just screaming. My biggest question was why? 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 It took me long years to stop asking why. I really wanted God to show me why he took Collier. I don't know if I'll ever, well, I have. I've quit asking why, but it's okay to ask God why. It's okay.
Eric Hodgson, who was on the podcast, said when he lost his daughter at 15 to suicide, and he said that question, why, Rachel, would never get answered. But what, the question, what do I want to do from here? What's next for me? What can I do that would live in service and purpose to my person? And I thought that was beautiful.
That's perfect. Yes. Yeah. You know, I would always circle back to why. And then it became not as important. Yeah. It became less important. And so then, just, you know, you're stronger than you think you are. You can do this. And then come to the point of honoring your child. I think that's what finally did it for me. Live in a way that will honor your child. Laying in bed would not have honored Collier.
Long term.
Yeah, but absolutely. Do it. Yeah. And feel what you feel.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And you know, I've always been this person for most of my life, especially after I left home. Don't worry about what other people think. My mother, bless her, she worried about what people thought all the time. And so I determined to grow up and not worry about what other people think. Don't worry about what other people think, because they're probably not even thinking about you.
If we're honest. Just pointing to my own self-absorption. It's fine. It's fine.
Just feel what you feel.
Right.
And I think that's the most important thing about grief, is feel it.
Right. Yeah. Don't stuff it. Feel it. Yell, cry in the river, and yell in the camper. I said I've have that same story. I live right next to Oak Mountain State Park, and there are trails where I know I have scared other hikers, because yes, if I'm going to go to God, it is going to be honest, okay? And so there were elevated voices and there were emotions, and it was so incredibly cathartic and healing. And so I love that you are sharing that was also your experience. I appreciate that. Karen, I am so grateful. I could keep talking to you. You were amazing. I'm so incredibly, and that's what I want to end on. When I tell you guys, Karen's joy, just watching her on the screen, her smile, her ability to get in that kayak and encourage other kayakers and to continue doing what she loves, and pursuing her passions, and then being so incredibly gracious to every person that she meets. It makes sense that you were a kindergarten teacher. I mean, Karen. And I'm just so incredibly grateful to know you, and I appreciate you coming on to share your story with us.
Thank you. Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. You have to come and let me show you down the car decay.
Yes, I want to do the car. Yes, I just feel bad. You know the thing. When it has been a long time since you've sat in your boat, you just feel bad for everybody else. They're going to be trying to catch up with you, chasing your boat if you're not doing 6 out of 6 combat rolls.
No.
If I haven't sat, I just feel like, I'm going to make everybody work. And I can already hear Kelly saying that, stop that.
So, paddle.
Yes, paddle. Yes, I will get in the seat again, as we are in the opening season. So yes, I will take you up on coming to see you on the car decay. I appreciate you being here. Thank you. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and I hope that you are as As encouraged as I am by Karen's story of resilience and openness and honesty and transparency about this process, if you need any support, I'm going to link the grief share group that she mentioned or the organization in the show notes. And if you need any support today or any day when you're hearing this and you would like to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram, send me a private message at Grief Informed Podcast. And I thank you guys for being here. Y'all have a great day.